Blog Talk Radio.
Right now, so we can get on. This is Beverly Black, and we are live on Tribe Family Channel. Our guest today is none other than Michael Cafani, Disco Daddy, and he's going to have to correct me on his name pronunciation when we bring him live. But ladies and gentlemen, you are definitely tuned in to hip hop at its finest. There is an event happening this weekend, Peace in the Streets Music Festival in Los Angeles, California, and there's going to be a lot of hip-hop artists and fans there, so Michael's going to tell us all about that. Meanwhile, let me tell you all about him. From Michael's profile, a.k.a. Disco Daddy, he was the West Coast's first rap recording artist and DJ/MC. In 1981, he recorded the first West Coast rap record, Gigolo Rap, with his partner, Captain Rap. They were the West Coast's first official rap group. In 1983, he was the first to organize West Coast breakdancers into what became known as the world-famous L.A. Breakdancers Break, or excuse me, the world-famous L.A. Breakers Breakdance Company. The official breakdance company for McDonald's on the West Coast, Adidas on the West Coast, and AM Radio 1580, K-Day. Often referred to as the father of West Coast hip-hop, he is recognized as being one of the most influential figures in West Coast hip-hop history. In October 2014, he was entered into the Guinness Book of World Records. And in August 2015, Rolling Stone magazine listed his song Gigolo Rap as one of the top 20 greatest West Coast rap songs before NWA. You heard it live here today. And without further ado, I bring to you Disco Daddy Michael Calfani. What's happening, Disco Daddy? You there?
How you doing? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you doing?
Good. I'm fine. Nice warm day in L.A. And thank you
for having me on the show, Beverly. It's an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to have you here. We want to get into what's happening with hip-hop in the community. We want you to give us your history, your background on hip-hop, and then we're going to close the show with what's happening this weekend. So you've got the platform. Brother, tell us the history of hip-hop.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, I was born and raised in New York, in the Bronx, and basically raised in Harlem. But at the age of 20, well, 19 actually, I went in the Air Force. And when I got out, I'd always wanted to see California. I'd seen postcards with palm trees and beaches, and I said, I got to get out there. Plus, I was studying acting. I was a theater-trained actor. And at that time, in the 70s, they were making all these blaxploitation movies, The Max, Sheba Baby, all of that kind of stuff. And a lot of black actors were moving from New York to L.A. It was like an exodus. You know, Moses Gunn, Ivan Dixon, James Earl Jones, Billy Dee Williams, all theater-trained actors. Everybody was moving out here. So I moved out here. And then since I got here about 1973, the NAACP had a campaign against blaxploitation movies and shut down the industry.
Wow.
They threatened boycotts against the major studios for making us look like pimps. Because, you see, Superfly, when it came out, it changed the game. Black people were serious about civil rights, marching, sit-ins, demonstrations. We changed through the process away and was wearing our hair natural and everything. Superfly came out and took us right back down, you know, wearing long fur coats. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Big camp house, and all of a sudden that became the thing again. So it changed basically the focus of young black Americans from the serious civil rights issues to being Superfly. It actually affected the, you know, then the movie industry picked up on that and started making a film. So anyway, and then basically shut them down. And I was at L.A. City College majoring in broadcasting, and I was driving past a disco, and my lady was like 5 months pregnant with our first child, and I had a big sign saying DJ want. It's called the Showcase Disco on Adams in Los Angeles. And so I said, heck, I might as well give it a shot. And I went in, the guy said he's paying $50 a night. So I auditioned for him, and I did little rhymes that I was made up about his place, and he liked that. And I got that from growing up in New York, listening to Frankie Cracker, Jocko. Most of the DJs back there rhymed, even on the radio.
Right.
So my image of a DJ was not a quiet, playing records, mixing person, you know. I threw in rhymes, I created rhymes, and so the guy said, I like you. I'm going to hire you. What you going to call yourself? I said, well, I'm about to have my first child. And it's my first job in a disco. I'm going to call myself Disco Daddy. And I thought of the name like this. It was 1976. Became so popular that another guy opened up a club, his competition called a workshop. And he had a security guard company. His security guards worked for us at the Showcase. And they said, if you're going to open up a club, you should hire Disco Daddy if you want to be successful. So he offered me $100 a night, advertising in a Scoop newspaper every week, and do radio commercials on KGFJ, something the other club owner wasn't doing. So one weekend I'm at the Showcase. The next weekend I'm at this new club called the Workshop, not even knowing if he was going to be successful, but he spent a lot of money on raised dance floors, things that they had up in high on 91st and Weston.
Man, after about 2 months, the club became so successful, the whole crowd that used to come to the showcase followed me to the workshop, and the showcase closed. Workshop became the number one, number one club from 77 up to the time I quit, 79. 79, Rapper's Delight came out, what you let off in your show. I heard that record, and I said, wow, I can do that. I was already rhyming, you know what I'm saying? But to make long, extended things, I knew I could do that. And I quit both my jobs. The other job was for a record store, which was the biggest in Los Angeles at the time, called Big Ben's. And I was the in-store DJ. I hosted Chaka Khan, Phyllis Hyman, Ray Parker Jr., and they had new albums out, all the artists. So I got to meet a lot of people behind the scenes, PR people. Could have taken PR jobs at Motown, Capitol Records, you know, to start off, you know what I'm saying, internships.
Right.
But I was flying high already at Disco Daddy. So I just started rapping. I used my connections because I knew all the DJs at the different clubs, Carolina West, the Speakeasy up in Hollywood, where we had a DJ pool where all the DJs met like twice a month to get our free records, or, you know, our 12 inches and stuff in the record company. And so I told them, I called guys and I said, hey, I'm rapping. Let me come to your club and do a couple of minutes on the weekends. And since nobody else is doing it, but people wanted to hear it and see it, the owner said, fine, you know, and I come in Friday, Saturday, $50, do 2 or 3 minutes, turn the place out. People would really be amazed that somebody could do that. And Rapper's Delight was very influential. At that period, you could be on the bus and you hear people saying, you ever go over your friend's house to eat and the food just ain't no good? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It was getting ingrained into people's minds that this is a funny kind of music. However, there was also a current of thought that this is a fad, a disco duck phase. These records would be gone in 2 or 3 years. You know what I'm saying? Nobody actually took it serious as the birth of a culture. Could never have thought that deeply about it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it just was fad records. Anyway, up until 1981, that's how I made my money. And sometimes I didn't make the money, did a lot of free shows and stuff just to get my name and promote myself. I learned a lot about promotion. Sometimes it's not about the money. You know, some things are advertised very well and your name gets out there. So I became known as the only rapper and people would hire me. Al Jarreau hired me for his club, The Rooftop, which was The Roof Garden, rather, which was on Wilshire Boulevard, him and his wife, Susan. And I became the resident rapper there. This is 1980, a year before I made my record. In 1981, Michael Mixon Moore, who was became popular doing the KJLH Midnight Militant mixes, the first one on the radio to do those type of mixes, he was doing club. He was the top club DJ. He was doing parties for like Red Fox and people like that. And he said, I'm doing Magic Johnson's birthday, his 22nd birthday, at the Variety Arts Theater downtown. In fact, it was exactly 35 years ago this week. I think Magic Johnson's birthday is either the 16th or the 22nd, something like that.
All right.
So what happened was a week before that, they were having a rap KJFJ was sponsoring rap contest at the Carolina West. I heard about it on the radio, and it was a $50 prize. I'm told, I'm going to go down and just snatch the $50 right quick. I go down to the club, and this young cat who later told me he heard about it right there at the club and decided just to get in on a lark. His name was Trey, and we ended up beating everybody, just me and him. So I'm the most well-known DJ in Los Angeles, and he's light-skinned with long hair. You know what I'm saying? Just that I felt that he beat me, but I felt that I lost because the girl screamed louder for him because he was looking cute. So
what happened was
if the club was packed, it was a chance for radio stations and club owners to see that this new music brings people out. This was actually the first test of that. A rap contest with two unknown, basically, guys doing something people had never seen before, which was a rap battle.
Right.
The whole thing was an experiment, but the club was packed. So it was so packed, they said, let's do this again. Week. If it had been a failure, then that would have been it. You know what I'm saying? So he got us $50, and we came back the next week. And the next week, I wrote a line at the end of my rap that neither one of us were reaching out to the audience at that time. And we did the same rap. But at the end of my rap, I did something that I reached into my DJ bag. The party's over here and the party's over there. Everybody in the house say, hell yeah. And it was like they were waiting to get involved. You know what I mean? And they just, the house exploded. Hell yeah. And when they got a line, when they put the hand over who the crowd wanted to be the winner, it was me. All right. Got my $50, went to go sit down, and the guy walked up. He said, hi, my name is Duffy Hooks. I was here last week, but I wanted to see who was going to win this week. And this is my father, Jerry Hooks, and we're starting the first rap label, West Coast rap label. I used to work for Sylvia Robinson, who put out Sugar Hill Gang. Okay, he had just got here from New York working with Sylvia and their record company, Sugar Hill Records. So he wanted to do this, be the first to do it on the West Coast. So he signed me. I became the first rapper signed to Rapper's Rap Records. But then Michael Mixon Moore called me the next week and said, I'm doing Magic Johnson's party. Why don't you come through and spit something for Magic? So I did that. I wrote a rhyme for him. I did his 22nd birthday party. He was there with Michael Cooper. They used to hang together. No bodyguards or nothing. They just came in. A line of women formed that went literally along the wall of the club, all the way outside, and each lady would walk up, say a few words, and then leave a number in a big glass bowl on a piece of paper in a big glass bowl. I was sitting in the middle of the thing. I was just him and Michael Cooper at the table. And that went on for the whole time I was at the club.
Wow.
How would Magic remember which lady he really wanted? Thus, they made some kind of note on the paper with the bowl filled up with little slips of paper. And each woman would just step right, no shame in the game or nothing. They lined up along the wall.
Wow.
And after I finished rapping, this guy stepped up and he said, hey, man, I rap. I said, what's your name? And he said, Larry Glenn. I said, are you good? And he said, I think so. And so I was planning, if my record worked out well, to produce other rappers. And so I said, well, I'm going to have an audition at my house. And I did the next week. And he was so good, in fact. And I was having problems. See, when you write raps, you got to memorize. You have to memorize the whole thing. That was a new sensation. Memorizing a song is different. You got verses, chorus, whatever. But a rap, you know, just goes on and on. And no matter how clever you are writing it, there's a point where you got to memorize it so you can perform it. So I figured, well, two guys, because there was no Run DMC. There was no rap that Run DMC came about 5 years later. So we were the first duo also in hip-hop. But I figured two guys on the stage would take the weight off of each other. And plus, you know, the ladies would have two different guys to scream about or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So, and we could work the stage better. And so I told Duffy, I said, hey, man, I found this guy. I want to change it from Disco Daddy to Disco Daddy and Captain Rap. And he said, you sure, Disco? We signing you, man. You know, we taking a gamble. I said, he's good. And so we went, we recorded the record, and everything was going fine, but we had one big lead weight around our shoulders. We were West Coast. And from the birth of hip-hop in 1973 to 1981, not one radio station in the world played West Coast rap records.
Wow.
They were being recorded. Yeah, they were being recorded, but even West Coast radio stations weren't playing West Coast rap. And it was only three rap groups anyway. There was a Sequence, Grandmaster Flash, Furious Five, the Sugar Hill Gang, and Curtis Blow. That was it on the radio anyway. You see what I'm saying? So it was all right. Like there was a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. But they were all New York, and if you didn't come from New York at that time and you weren't black, you just didn't get to play. You see what I'm saying? So we took it to the radio station at KGFJ, and 2 days later, I'm sitting at home. And again, it was 35 years ago exactly this week. It's just a trip because we're performing this Saturday, 35 years after the record debuted on the radio. But 2 days later, Tyrone Boogie Nelson called me. He's on the air. Said, Mike, turn on your radio. And I can't ever describe to anyone what it's like to turn the radio on, major market, not in Nebraska or Iowa, but I'm here in Los Angeles. You see what I'm saying? And turn the radio on, and the number one, because there was no K-Day at that time, there was only one black radio station everybody grew up here with. That was KGFJ, playing my record. So
Lord,
I just knew.
How did that feel?
Yeah.
Wait, before you go into...
Oh, it's indescribable. It's surreal.
How did that feel to hear yourself on the radio to hear your
that
song.
All after
I mean,
2 years.
We've seen movies where, you know, they're showing us, you know, the soul movies, the temps and, you know, what have you, when they stop
right.
and hear themselves on the radio and stuff like that. We're watching a movie. But now I'm talking
right.
to someone that lived it. How does that feel?
It was indescribable. It's almost surreal because you got to remember, I had spent the previous 2 years just rapping everywhere. It helped me get my raps tight, though. All that free stuff that I did, it helped me get my raps tight, get the creative ideas for a song and everything like that. And I was just really, I was just unbelievable. And then naturally, you get some feedback from your friends and stuff like that. They're looking at you now. Like some of them changed. I never really changed. But some of them, oh, you're too good to hang out now. And they didn't really know what to say about you. Because most of them were the
Why,
ones that were
you
saying, you're not going to
your
play
lane.
Your record. Huh?
Well, you know, that's the peer pressure. You found your lane, and you were in
right.
that lane, riding
right.
in your giftings, and it was coming about. And so the crew, you know, they missed you out, you know, just hang out. You were young, and so,
right.
you know,
right.
still hanging out, found your way young, and so your crew missed you out there, right?
We were lucky because it was a timing thing in the sense that J.B. Stone, the program director of KGFJ, he was looking for a rap group local because they were starting a stay-in-school program. And he had some vision. He figured if he used this new music, that the kids would come to the auditoriums at the school KGFJ was going to be at, and they wouldn't need to bring a superstar. They just, because they're coming out for this new rapper who they didn't have to pay thousands of dollars, you know, and the R&B singers or whatever like that.
Right.
And so... it worked out well. They took us to a lot of venues and schools and everything. And we basically, it changed my life because I live over in Baldwin Hills. And back then, we didn't have the internet. And people didn't
right.
know what you looked like, but they knew the name Disco Daddy and Captain Rapper. I'd be in a supermarket, and it only took one person to say, hey, Disco Daddy, you're over there at the produce.
Okay.
And I'm the first rapper on the radio, so people coming over to the produce aisle for my autograph and stuff like that. And I mean, this restaurant, the Sizzler I used to go to right over here in La Brea by my house, the same thing. As soon as people were here, you the guy, you Disco Daddy, you know, can I get an autograph, blah, 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 my son. It was really unbelievable. So I got a little taste of what it's like being a star only because it was different music. You know what I'm saying? It, you know, the record
uh-huh.
did sell well, but it was just that I was the only face of this new music that people could see. It made me very, very popular. And that really
wow.
changed my life. Yeah.
Wow.
That
and
was
that's,
stage one.
The foundation of the West Coast hip hop era. Now, I know that in time, someone will go take us back to the contest and how that opened up someone else's career, and you can name names. We don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
The light
okay,
skin brother.
Oh, light skin. Yeah, he changed his name later to Ice-T. Okay, and so that his career. He was called Trey at the time. He just called himself Trey in the early days. He didn't change his name to Ice-T until about 82, but that was the guy I rapped against, and I didn't know it at the time that you know, and he didn't know where our futures would go. But his career started that night because when he won the first contest, he looked at his Art of Rap video, and he'll tell you, the Carolina West, 1981, when he beat me, he said, wow, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can make a living doing this, you know? And
wow.
he was a break dancer. That's what he was doing. And he just got into the contest on a lark, he told me later. He said he heard them announce that they're going to have a rap contest, and he happened to already be in the club. That was his party spot. And he just joined in on the lark, but he beat me. And I was devastated because I,
he may
you
have
know,
beat you, but listen to what you're saying. What you're saying
mm-hmm.
is Ice-T cut his teeth
right.
with this. You know, you were like his sparring partner. So that's how he
right.
got, you know, to do what he's doing because he was sparring with you. So
right.
each of you are walking in your own purpose, in your own lane, but he won a contest, but he didn't beat you. He just won a contest, cutting his teeth with you
it
as
was
you
really,
guys sparked swords.
It, it's unbelievable. We met years later and talked about it. You know, he became a big star and everything. But I didn't even know for the first 3 or 4 years when he started making records that that was the same guy that I had rapped at, you know, against in the club. You see what I'm saying? He had changed his name to Ice-T, and he didn't look exactly the same. And I sort of forgot because this was, he came out with his first record in 83. So this is a couple of years later. And then I started hearing Ice-T, but it just didn't even click that this was the same cat. And it wasn't until 1984 when I started the L.A. Breakers, and a movie company that was making this film, Breakin', hired me and my group, the L.A. Breakers.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuned in live to Tribe Family Channel.
Say hi.
Excuse me, Michael, because I know you. I heard you in the background, so let me go ahead and do a station break and remind our listeners that they're tuned in to Tribe Family Channel. We are live with Michael Cafani, Disco Daddy, and he is telling us all about how hip-hop on the West Coast came about and these rap contests where Ice-T, formerly known as the rapper Trey, back in his young heyday, cut his teeth and sparked swords with him. And ladies and gentlemen, if you can turn down the background sounds, your lines are open, we'd appreciate it because we are recording live and this will be archived. And this is brought to you by Tribe Family Channel and Gumbo for the Soul International. I am Beverly Black, the creator. And so, Michael, tell us, going back to, like, you know, winning the rap battles and how that changed your career, what else opened up for you at that time?
Okay, say that one more time. I'm sorry.
I was saying, so after the rap battles, and you said that changed your life, it opened up doors for you and what have you, before I had you reminisce as to you and Ice-T's crossing paths, you were telling us how all of this changed your life and what other doors opened up for you.
Okay. Well, what happened was after I had made the record, Duffy sold the track to another guy who, to make a long story short, cheated us out of money, wasn't paying us royalties, told us the record wasn't selling, but he had boxes of records. And we were at a club one night, this was Daddy and Captain Rap performing in Hollywood, and a lady came up out the audience. She said, "Wow, this is Daddy Captain Rap, your record is number one in Jacksonville." And me and Captain Rap looked at each other, we said, "Jacksonville?" She said, "Yeah, Jacksonville, Florida, your record is number one." That was the first time we knew we had a national hit record because the guy was telling us the record wasn't selling anywhere. So we refused to record anything with him. And the other thing that happened, I had signed with the guy, but on fire, I was off signing a contract. And wouldn't you know it, at that time, Motown called us in for an interview. We were going to be Motown's first rap group. The record was so hot, and we had used Rick James' music from Give It To Me, Baby, that they were realizing, wow, you know, we're Motown. We should be on the cutting edge of this. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sylvia Robinson
right.
was raking in the dough, and they were still R&B. So we were going to be their first rap group, but then put the contract and we said, still left. And he said,
now, I have to tell you, you're breaking up a bit, so I don't know if you are.
He said it means that he can keep you signed for 7 years, whether you record another thing with him or not. So I couldn't sign with Motown. That was the first big downer. We couldn't sign and become the Motown group. And when he found out that I was going to be, that Motown wanted to sign us, they wouldn't release us from the, he wouldn't release me from the contract. The Dirty Dog,
wow.
I hope the soul rots in hell, yeah. So I had to think of something else to do. And all through 1982, I was just sort of depressed and didn't know what I was. I did some gigs off the record. We were able to make a living doing clubs and stuff in different parts of the country. But then in 83, I saw the New York City Breakers dancing for President Ronald Reagan at the White House. I was watching the news. And I said to my lady, I said, "Wow, you know what? there is no L.A. Breakers. So I called KGFJ Radio, who had played my first record, and I told them I'd like to do a breakdance contest at the World on Wheels Skating Rink. It would be the first one on the West Coast, first one in L.A. And again, because I was hip-hop and they had played my record, they said, Mike, we'll send a DJ down there. They wanted, again, to be this opportunity to get in on the ground floor of what the teenagers are doing now. So it was successful, and I got my first group of L.A. Breakers out of that contest. And then they started bringing other dancers to me and stuff, and it was multiracial, Filipino, Mexican, Black, Korean, you know. And I'm at Inner City Cultural Center where James Burke allowed me to have the space because it grew to where I had like 100 teenagers. And he said, I want you to meet somebody. And he took me up to the auditorium where we rehearsed, and this white guy sitting there, and he said, this is Jack Kent. He's an advertising executive that runs McDonald's advertising campaigns for McDonald's on the West Coast. And they're looking for a breakdance group to represent McDonald's. So he looked at my group and saw this multicolored racial dance group doing fantastic stuff from the age of three. We had dancers as young as three doing headspins and stuff like that. And he said, you're going to be McDonald's official breakdance group. That was the first thing. Yeah, so that was life-changing because then that was a big break because we were already sponsored by Adidas. I got Adidas and McDonald's together, and they made up suits with the McDonald's and Adidas logos on them for us to dance in. Then K-Day called, 1580 K-Day, and called us in and said, you know, we're going 24-hour rap, and we want to be the number one station. Now, listen, remember I started with KGFJ. KGFJ actually was the first station to play a rap record. So they're forgotten about, except by me, for being instrumental in hip-hop. They also helped me sponsor the first breakdance contest. Hello?
All right.
Okay, yeah, the first breakdance contest. So K-Day, however, offered me a deal at 50,000-watt station. You could hear them up in Sacramento. Okay, K-Day was a small station. Once you left Compton, you're out of range. And at that time, because I'm thinking, think big, that K-Day gave me a deal. They said, you'll be our official group, but you can't work with any other radio station. Greg Mack is doing our programming. 24-hour rap will be the first station. And then you guys will be the face of K-Day. They had the whole package. They had a visual, Los Angeles had a visual and an audio 24-hour rap station to represent hip-hop in Los Angeles. They had the whole packet, the radio station.
Wow.
So everywhere K-Day went, Magic Mountain, whatever, they took us, and we blew up. You know, then we made Newsweek magazine, July 2nd, 1984. And after that, it was on. My phone rang every 30 seconds. IBM, J. Walker Thompson, big advertising agencies giving private parties, renting Magic Mountain for a day for their employees. We want the L.A. Breakers to perform. Tori Spelling's dad, Aaron Spelling, called me at my house personally, said his daughter had requested for her 11th birthday at the Daisy that could her dad find the L.A. Breakers. And that happened because we did Henry Winkler. We did Henry Winkler, who was the Fonz. We did his son, Jed.
Right, I remember
stepson.
Henry Winkler. I actually went on the set. Oh, no, I was thinking about another show. Never mind. I was on the set when Vinnie Barbarino from Welcome Back, Carter. But, yeah, that was back in the Henry Winkler and Happy Days, you know, all that. So, wow, that's amazing. So, Henry Winkler, go ahead.
Yeah, we did his son's bar mitzvah, and they had a little clique, the teenagers and young kids. They go to each other's birthday parties, all the Beverly Hills rich kids. So Tori Spelling was there, and then Katrina Holden, who is Charles Bronson's daughter, was there, and she requested us at her birthday party. All of a sudden, we're doing a lot of celebrities' kids' birthday parties in their big-ass mansions. Ooh, excuse me. Their big mansions around the swimming pool, and we were the rage for that Hollywood set. And that became life-changing because Henry Winkler had a charity called the Children of McLaren Hall. McLaren Hall was a place for abandoned and abused children here in Los Angeles. And his charity brought entertainers, top name entertainers, John Ritter, Diana Ross. I was on the bus with all these people to McLaren Hall to perform for the kids. So we did that, and that was just life changing. A lot of little things happened. Like a guy came up who had a Rolls Royce company, white Rolls Royce, and he said, "You guys do a lot of big parties. I'll tell you what, I'll take you to all your big affairs in these white Rolls Royces if you allow me to stand outside and give out business cards."
Wow.
At all these shows.
That's right.
Yeah. So we had white Rolls Royces, three or four of them, at all of our big shows that we did. And it just gave us just like an image that just was unbelievable. The Olympics was happening that year. 84 was a fantastic year. And toward the end of that year, my dancers went to the Forum to audition for the closing ceremonies of the Olympics at Lionel Richie. That was a heck of a year, 1984,
yes,
for us, the closing ceremonies of the Olympics. It really was fantastic. So hip-hop gave me, a heck of a foundation from 81 to 85, which is why I'm primarily known as the father of West Coast hip-hop, because of the influence I had in both areas, not just in rap, being the first rap record, but organizing 125 dancers, which was the official breakdance group for McDonald's, Adidas, 1580 K-Day, and the L.A. Lakers. The L.A. Lakers had halftime entertainment by the Soul Train dancers. Benita Joe Freeman, one of the most popular Soul Train, that formed the group. Okay, well, she was doing halftime. I didn't know this at the time, however. I get called to a meeting by Jeannie Buss, Jerry Buss's daughter. She was running the Forum Club at the Forum for her dad, just out of college, and Forum Tennis Club. And she was going with John McEnroe, the tennis player. So she called me and she said, "My dad, we're having a private party up at Pick Fair, which is the mansion Jerry Buss had just bought, and we would like the L.A. Breakers to perform." So she called me in the office to talk about it. And while we're sitting there, Lon Rosen, who was hired to be promotions for the Lakers by Jerry Buss, who's now vice president of the Dodgers, because later on Lon Rosen became Magic Johnson's manager. When Magic brought his interest into the Dodgers, he brought Lon with him and made him executive vice president of the Dodgers. And Jeannie Buss, as you know, is now president of the Lakers. So this is, they were both young in their career. So he said, we're doing the Showtime thing. And we want Showtime to be a concept associated with Laker basketball. And that's where you guys come in. We'd like the L.A. Breakers to be the official halftime performance for the L.A. Lakers. And just as he said that, the door opened, and in walked Benita Joe Freeman, who I was a member of the original Soul Train Gang. Also, I didn't mention that in 73 when she was on. Yeah, so I recognized her right away. And he said, "Benita, this is Michael Calfani. You guys, I'm sorry, street dancing and Soul Train has had its day. Everybody wants to see breakdancing now, so they're going to be doing the official halftime shows." And I looked at her face and she looked at me. I apologized to her this year for the first time at the Soul Train picnic, first time I've seen her in almost 30 something years. And she just looked at me. She said, "Lon, if it's a question of money, then maybe we can talk about it." And I had told Lon, "We'd do it for free." He said, "How much?" Because he had asked me before she came, "How much you got?" I said, "We'd do it for free." "Yeah, take halftime for the Lakers?" Okay, you know, and we were already, like I said, K-Days, for free. We would dance for free because the promotion, the value of being, you understand what I'm saying? I was making money in all these other areas.
If you can get on that type of platform, that's a worldwide platform, so you were willing to do that for free. Plus, you're looking at Benita Joe Freeman like you are taking a job.
Exactly. And that was really that. I didn't know that she, if I'd have known, let's say, that they were the dance group, I might not have gone down there, because I had so much going already, as you can see. That was the last people that called me. We became the official the official dance company for four organizations here in L.A. And but we took the job. We turned out each halftime show. And it was really funny that breakdancing is just so amazing at that time for people to see it. We would go back up into the stands after halftime and sit. And you'd see all these kids separating from their parents around the stadium, making their way through the seats, the rows of seats, to come over to where we were sitting at to get our autographs and stuff, even though the game had started back.
Wow.
It was just funny. My kids got used to being stars, signing autographs, you know, for other kids like themselves.
Right.
It was really a fantastic thing.
So life-changing, really so life-changing. That is so wonderful to hear. That's so wonderful to hear. And so now you're involved. No, let's fast forward to the inductee into the Guinness Book of World Records and, you know, the Hall of Fame that you're boasting of, which is good, you know, because you deserve all that is, you know, being bestowed upon you. So tell us about that.
Okay, the concert coming up.
The Guinness Book Hall of the Guinness Book World of Records that you have.
How many records?
The Guinness Book World of Records. In the Guinness Book World of Records, on your profile, it says that you've been inducted. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sort of hear you. The Guinness World Records you're talking about.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, that was written with Mariah Carey's husband, Nick Cannon. That was in 2014, and we basically Samsung was having a promotion for its new camera. It was called the NX, and they were having a the Guinness people certified that with this new camera, you know, they wanted to break the selfies record for the most selfies in 1 hour. And so they got Nick Cannon and me, and they had Juliette, the lady from Dancing with the Stars. She's one of the judges. Forget her last name. Julianne Hough. We went down to Hollywood Boulevard. This is right next to the Man's Chinese Theater. They had some steps you can go up, and it's a big plaza up there. They were going to have it up there. So we went down to Hollywood Boulevard, and we're telling people, come on, we got Nick Cannon. We want to try to break the world's selfie record. The Guinness people up there. And we actually got tourists, 283 of them, to come up off the street. They're so excited to meet Nick Cannon. At that time, he was getting all the news because they had divorced Mariah Carey. So, you know, this is 2014, October. And we got 283 people come up to sign up, and we broke the record for selfies in 1 hour. And just like that, I ended up in the Guinness Book of World Records. And it's not, when I did my research, it's funny, when I did my research, there's a few rappers in there for things that have nothing to do with music. Like Ludacris is in there for getting 1,000 people in a shower stall. Yeah,
Lord,
in the shower. 1,000 people, and you can look it up. Ludacris is in there for getting 1,000 people in the shower. A shower. It must have been not your ordinary regular shower, of course. But
right,
he did
it must
that.
Have been a castle-sized shower, but still 1,000 people are in there. That's crazy. All right.
Dr. Dre is in there. Dr. Dre is in there because he's rich. He's the first rap billionaire.
Wow.
So only two West Coast rappers are in the Guinness Book of World Records. His is music related.
Wow.
And
I know his son, Curtis Young, I've talked to he and his wife extensively, and so he has a fascinating story, and this is before Straight Outta Compton, when we were in talks about me possibly publishing his book because of Gumball for the Soul Publications. And so Curtis Young has a fascinating story, Dr. Dre's son, when his book comes out. Ooh, is all I can say. It is something.
Wow.
So now, you've got this event coming up this weekend, Peace in the Streets Music Festival in Los Angeles. Tell us about that as we get ready to wind down the show. We're going to play the entire 14 minutes, 45 seconds of Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang. And we're going to use this closing segment to hear about this music festival and who all you anticipate being there, how it develops, and where it's going. Tell us about that.
Okay, The concert this is Saturday, the 27th. It's called Peace in the Streets because of all the things that are going on. I joined the board of the Universal Hip Hop Museum in January, and what the Universal Hip Hop Museum is charged with is preserving the history and promoting hip hop culture worldwide, and we've got chapters now all over the world, okay, because that's what universal means. It's trying to be the repository of information where scholars 50 years from now can go to, or just anybody. You got one of those trivial questions about somebody who was the first to scratch. You could go to the website or go to the Brick and Mortar Museum, which is being built in New York, and find out things like that. Theater, Grand Wizard Theater was the first one invented scratch. Little obscure things like that, which are important because they would be lost in history otherwise. You see, so the
Absolutely.
University Hip Hop Museum set up a West Coast board and charged us with a mission to not only do research to catalog that for the museum, but to brand the name Universal Hip Hop Museum on the West Coast. So we have succeeded. This is the biggest hip hop concert in history. We got 100 acts. All the acts, it's unique in that the acts range from the first rap record, which is mine, the father of West Coast hip hop, all the way up to new and underground artists here on the West Coast. On one stage, you're going to get 40 years of hip hop history.
Wow, that is amazing. That is amazing. Well, let me just shout out D. LaBrie, hip hop OG out of Oakland, California. Let me shout out my daughter, a dope female MC, Kiana Bean, because I know that they will likely be in the building. And I think that is absolutely amazing what you're doing. Congratulations to you with the Universal Hip Hop Museum. I remember when that came about, you and I were in talks back then about having you come on as a host with Tribe Family Channel. And, you know, little did I know that you had so much going on in the works. And so congratulations to you on that. And I just want to add a note to the preservation of the hip-hop culture. I don't think it would be quite complete without including how Def Poetry Jam came along, because Def Poetry Jam set a stage that allowed so many artists to come through and get jobs and were discovered because of that. And so I would like to definitely shout out my partner in creativity, Mr. Bruce George, who is the creator and co-founder of Russell Simmons' Def Poetry Jam on HBO. And I feel as though he should be part of that culture. And I definitely want to invite your acquaintance with Mr. Bruce George, who is also now heading Genius is Common, because everyone has a genius seed. And so I just wanted to, you know, shout that out there. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. Michael, Mr. Disco Daddy himself, you have really, really given us a lot of manna and information that we did not otherwise know about when it comes to the birth of hip hop over here on the West Coast and the forerunners of, you know, making that all possible with the break dancers and, you know, just the philanthropy that you're doing that has taken you to where you are. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing that you were able to tap into so many of the people that you did through Henry Winkler's Foundation, because that I'm big on philanthropy. So when it comes to something like that where, you know, you're doing, you know, entertainment for causes and really impacting, you know, the underdog, the underprivileged, the left out, the oppressed, that's huge. That is huge. So I want to commend you, and I want to thank you for being here live with me on Tribe Family Channel, Gumbo for the Soul International, Brand Family Company, and much success to this amazing, amazing Peace in the Streets Music Festival this weekend. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to get out there. Now, before we close with Rappers Delight.
Wait, Beverly. It's
well,
being streamed live.
I'm going to give it back to – I'm going to give you the mic back. I was going to say before we close with Rappers Delight, I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell everyone where they can access Peace in the Streets and where they can actually connect with you on social media.
Okay. I'm Michael Kalfani, K-H-A-L, F as in Frank, A-N-I, on Facebook. And DJ Disco Daddy at gmail.com. Also, I'm writing a book, Whatever Happened to Disco Daddy. I have a Whatever Happened to Disco Daddy, the book, Facebook page. And we're streaming the concert live on the Universal Hip Hop Museum YouTube channel. So all you have to do is go to Universal Hip Hop Museum, UHHM.org, and get the information about the museum, how to donate, how to support us, because we need the donations to help build this repository. And you can get information on our virtual museum, which is a museum that's going to be in place virtually on the internet before the brick and mortar is built, so that you can find, again, answers to some of the questions, like I was saying, about hip-hop and artists. But the Universal Hip Hop Museum YouTube channel, we will be broadcasting, streaming it live worldwide. 3:30
wow.
to 9:30 Saturday, worldwide. 3:30 to 9:30 Saturday. Go to UHHM.org and you can get more information.
Thank you, thank you, thank,
thank
you for
you,
that
Beverly.
Information.
And
it's
thank
my
you for
absolute
having me on your
pleasure.
Show.
It's my absolute pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much for being here. I want to remind our listeners definitely to connect with Tribe Family Channel on Twitter at Tribe Family US. I'm Beverly Black, the creator, under the Gumbo for the Soul International family brand, which is at Gumbo for the Soul. You can definitely follow this broadcast at blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. And I want to thank you once again, Disco Daddy, for dropping in, dropping those gems on us. Now I want you to shout out some of the hip-hop artists that are going to be there this weekend, and then we're
okay.
going to go ahead out with Rapper's Delight.
All right, I'm going to do that because I got to go pick up my grandkid. Kid Frost, the first Latino rapper, DJ Joe Cooley, who was with Rodney Owen. Joe Cooley, he's going to be showing off his DJ skills. Ronnie Hudson, California likes the party. You know that bit. That's the California
yes, I remember
anthem.
That. Love it.
That's Ronnie Hudson, California Pop Lot. And closing the show will be Disco Daddy and Captain Rap. All throughout the show, we have breakdancers and pop lockers from all over the city, youngsters and new underground rappers, new trap rappers, different types of hip-hop that are going to be showcased. So it's a well, and we have graffiti artists that will be doing graffiti art right there. All the elements that rep hip-hop will be repped in our show. The Universal Hip-Hop
awesome.
Museum and Stage of the Arts present this Peace in the Streets Music Fest, MacArthur Park, 3:30 to 9:30 Saturday.
That is so awesome. That is so awesome. I wish I were in Los Angeles right now. I'm in Northern California. But, my brother, I hope to meet you when I'm signing my book out in Carson City, September 24th. And much success with your book. I want to stay updated with that. So I'm definitely going to follow that book page, Whatever Happened to Disco Daddy, on Facebook. So, ladies and gentlemen,
you.
I want to thank you for tuning in. Thank Disco Daddy for dropping hip-hop history in our lap like that.
God bless
it
you,
was,
Beverly. Thank you.
Rife with information, and we're going out with Rapper's Delight. Go pick up those grams, and you take care.
Look out. Peace.
All right. God bless. Thank you so much.
But I brought two friends along, and next time. See, I go by the code of the doctor of the mix. These reasons I'll tell you why. You see, I'm 6'1" and I'm tons of fun, and I dress to a D. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so viciously. I got bodyguards, I got two big guns that definitely ain't the whack. I got a Lincoln Continental and some new Cadillac. So after school, I take a dip in the pool, which is really on the wall. I got a color TV so I can see the Knicks play basketball. Hear me talking about checkbook, credit cards, more money than a sucker could ever spend. But I wouldn't give a sucker or a bum from the rock and not a dime till I made it again. Everybody go, hotel, motel, what you gonna do today? Cause I'm gonna get a fly girl, gonna get some swag and drive off in a Death OJ. Everybody go, hotel, motel, holiday.
Well, it's on and on and on and on and on. The beat don't stop until the break of dawn. I said a M-A-S, a T-E-R, a G with a double E. I said I go by the unforgettable name of the man they call a Master G. Well, my name is known all over the world by all the fox, the ladies, and the pretty girls. I'm going down in history as the baddest rapper that ever could be. Now I'm feeling the highs and you're feeling the lows. The beat starts getting into your dough. You start popping your fingers and stopping your feet and moving your body while you're sitting in your seat. And then, damn, they start doing the freak. I said, bam, I ride it out of your seat. Then you throw your hands high in the air. You're rocking to the rhythm, shaking there. Air. You're rocking to the beat without a care. Who's the short shot MCs for the affair? Now I'm not as tall as the rest of the gang, but I rap to the beat just the same. I got a little face and a pair of rhyme eyes. All I'm here to do, ladies, is hypnotize. Singing on and on and on and on and on. The beat don't stop until the break of dawn. I'm singing on and on and on and on and on. Like a hot butter, the pop, the pop, the pop, the pop, the pop, pop, the pop, pop. You don't dare stop or come alive, y'all. Give me what you got. I guess by now you can take a hunch and find that I am the baby of the bunch, but that's okay. I still keep in stride, cause all I'm here to do is kiss a wither your behind. Sing it on and on and on and on. The beat don't stop until the break of dawn. Sing it on and on and on and on and on. Rock, rock, yo. I throw it on the floor. I'm gonna freak you here. I'm gonna freak you there. I'm gonna move you out of this atmosphere. Cause I'm one of a kind and I'll shock your mind. I put the jig, 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 sing yo behind. I say the 1, 2, 3, 4. Come on, girl. I get on the floor. I come alive, yo. Give me what you got, cause I'm guaranteed to make you rock. I said 1, 2, 3, 4. Tell me, Wonder Mike, what are you waiting for?
I said a hip hop, the hippie to the hippie, the hip hip hop, and you don't stop rocking to the bang, bang, the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie beat. Well, Skittle and Bebop, we rock a Scooby Doo. And guess what, America, we love you. Well, cause it rocks in a room with us so much so. You can rock till you're 101 years old. I don't mean to brag, I don't mean to boast, but we're like hot butter on a breakfast toast. Rock it out. Baby bubba, bass bubba to the boogie, bang bang, the boogie to the beat. Beat is so unique. Come on, everybody, and dance to the beat. Stories and she he's heard fables that are vicious on the mic. At the turntable, this young reporter I did adore. So I rock your bitches rhyme like I never did before. She said, damn, fly guy, I'm in love with you. The Casanova legend must have been true. I said, by the way, baby, what's your name? Said, I go by the name Lois Lane. And you can be my boyfriend, you sure they can. Just let me quit my boyfriend, call Superman. I said, he's a fairy, I do suppose. Flying through the air, a pantyhose. He may be very sexy or even cute, but he looks like a sucker in a blue and red suit. I said, you need a man who's got finesse and his whole name across his chest. He may be able to fly all through the night, but can he rock a party till the early light? He can't satisfy you with his little worm, but I can bust you out with my super sperm. I go do it, I go do it, I go do it, do it, do it. And I'm here, and I'm there, I'm Big Bang Hank, I'm everywhere. I just throw your hands up in the air and party harder like you just don't care. Let's do it, I don't stop, y'all, I take a talk, y'all. You don't stop, I go home, tell, home, tell. And what you gonna do today? If I'm gonna get a fly girl, gonna get some spank and drive off in a Death OJ. Everybody go home, tell, home, tell, Holiday Inn. You say if your girl starts acting up, then you take a friend. I say skip, God, what can I say? I can't fit them all inside my OJ, so I just take half and bust them out. I give the rest of Master Key so he can shock the house.
It was 12 o'clock and one Friday night. I was rocking to the beat, feeling alright. Everybody was dancing on the floor, doing all the things they never did before. And then the fly, fly girl with a sexy lead, she came into the bar, she came into the scene. As she traveled deeper inside the room, all the fellas checked out her white ass shoe. She came up to the table, looked into my eyes, then she turned around and shook up behind. So I said to myself, it's time for me to release my vicious rhyme, I call my masterpiece. And now people in the house, this is just for you, a little rap to make your burger do. Now the group you hear is called Phase 2. And let me tell you something, we're a hell of a crew. Once a week, we're on the street just to cut the jam and make it free. For you to party, got to have the mood, so we'll get right down and give you a groove. For you to dance, you got to be hot, so we'll get right down and make it rock. Now the system's on and the girls are there. You definitely have a rockin' affair. But let me tell you something, there's still one fact, that to have a party, got to have a rap. So when the party's over, you're making it home and trying to sleep before the break of dawn. And while you're sleeping, you start to dream and think of how you dance on a disco scene. A name appears in your mind, yeah, a name you know that was right on time. It was Phase 2, I just do what I do, rocking you down cause you don't be good to the rhythm of the beat that makes you free. Come alive, girl, get on your feet. To the rhythm of the beat, to the beat, to the double beat, beat that makes you free. To the rhythm of the beat that says you go on and on until the break of dawn. I got the man coming on right now. Guaranteed, you no doubt. He goes by the name of Wonder Mike. Come on, Wonder Mike, do what you like.
I say a can of beer that's sweeter than honey, like a millionaire that has no money, like a rainy day that is not wet, like a gambling fiend that does not bet, like Dracula without his fangs, like the boogie to the boogie without the boogie thing, like collard greens that don't taste good, like a tree that's not made out of wood, like going up and not coming down. It's just like the beat without the sound, on down to the beat. To do the freak, everybody just rock and dance to the beat. Have you ever went over a friend's house to eat and the food just ain't no good? I mean, the macaroni's soggy, the peas almost, and the chicken tastes like wood. So you try to play it off like you think you can by saying that you're full. And then your friend says, mama, he's just being polite. He ain't finished, oh, that's full. So your heart starts pumping and you think of a lie and you say that you already ate. And your friend says, man, there's plenty of food, so keep piling for more on your plate. But while the sticky food's steaming, your mind starts to dream of the moment it's time to leave. And then you look at your plate and your chicken's fully rotting into something that looks like cheese. Oh, so you say, that's it, I got to leave this place, I don't care what these people think. I'm just sitting here making myself nauseous with this ugly food that stinks. Oh, so you bust out the door while it's still closed, still sick from the food you ate. And then you run to the store for quick relief from a bottle of KO Pectate. And then you call your friend 2 weeks later to see how he has been. And he says, I understand about the food, babe, but we're still friends. But with a hip hop, the hippie to the hip of the hip, hip a hoppy, you don't stop the rocker through the bang bang boogie. Say, up jumps the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. I said, Hank, can you rock? Can you rock to the rhythm that just don't stop? But can you hit me too? The shoo-be-doo. I said, come on, make the people move.
I go toot the horns and ring the bell because I am the man with the clientele. And if you ask me why, I rock so well in Big Bang. I got clientele from the time I was only 6 years old. I never forgot what I was told. It was the best advice that I ever had. It
came to my wife and said, oh, dad, he said, sit down, punk, I want to talk to you. And don't say a word until I'm through. Now there's a time to laugh, a time to cry, a time to live and a time to die. A time to break and a time to chill, to act civilized or act real ill. But whatever you do in your lifetime, you never let an MC steal your rhyme. So from 66 to this very day, I'll always remember what it had to say. So when the sucker MCs try to jump my style, I let them know that I'm versatile. I got style for them and a little black book. It's full with rhymes and I know you want to look. But the thing that separates you from me, and that is all originality. Because my rhymes are on, from what you heard, I didn't even write, not a dot word. And I say a little more later on tonight, so the sucker MCs can fight all night. I take a top, y'all, a beat, beat, y'all, a left rock, y'all. You know, stop, go home, tell, motel, or what you gonna do today? Cause I'm gonna get a fly girl, gonna get some swag and drive off in a death. Oh, yeah, everybody go hotel, motel, Holiday Inn. You say if your girl starts acting up, then you take her friend. I like that, y'all, to the beat, y'all, a beat, beat, y'all. You know, stop, I'm Master G, I'm on Melo, it's on you. So what you gonna do?
Well, like that. Crossing on the links, yo, I like fucking rocking in stereo. I like the bar case singing Holy Ghost, the sound of those down. I dare play the most, is it like my man, a Captain Sky, his name's E. Her, with the super sperm. We rock and we don't stop. I get off, y'all. I'm here to give you what you got. To the beat that it makes you freak. It's come alive, girl. I get on your feet. I like a peppy mason without the case. Like Sarah Foster without her face. Like the bar case. On the mic, like getting like down for you to not like moving your body if you don't know how. Right to the rhythm and slow down. Like some of the live dudes that Master G, the brother who rocked your business. See, and at the age of one, my life begun. At the age of two, I was doing it too. At the age of three, it was you and me rocking to the sounds of the Master G. At the age of four, I was on the floor giving all the beats what they thought it for. At the age of five, I didn't take no job with a Master G. So the way I I went off, I gotta run on down to the beat, you see, getting right on down. Making all the girls just take off the car to the beat, the beat, to the double beat, beat that makes you free. At the age of eight, I was a really great, so every night you see, I had a date. At the age of nine, I was a right on down to the beat. Definitely.